I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. One of my favorite books of the year is The Moving and Elegant, The Year of Finding Memory by Judy Fong Bates. She came to Canada in the 1950s at a very young age. Her parents were dispirited Chinese who resented their new home away from home. She feels more Canadian than anything else, and a trip to China some years later uncovers some backstory about her parents' life, as well as reveals to herself a greater understanding of her identity, whatever that might be. It's an unforgettable book from one of the country's acclaimed writers. Her short story collection, China Dog and Other Stories, and her novel Midnight at the Dragon Cafe were critically acclaimed. The Year of Finding Memories, published by Random House. She joined me last week while in Vancouver promoting this book. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Judy Fong Bates. Good morning, Ms. Fong Bates.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
So let's start when you come to Canada. When was that?
I came to Canada in 1955. I was 5 years old.
Yeah, and you came with who?
I came with my mother.
Yeah. You came to Vancouver first, right? I guess that's the point of entry.
Yes, it was a stopover. We didn't come in a jet. There weren't jets then. It was a propeller-driven plane, so we had to stop and, I guess, refuel in Vancouver.
And so you went from Vancouver to Ontario, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Why Ontario and not Vancouver?
Well, my father was operating a laundry in Ontario, and he had gone to Ontario when he originally came to Canada in 1914, and I guess that was the place he knew. I think that's a really good question, because I've often asked the same question myself, because my father was one of those people who operated laundries in very, very remote towns, and the only reason that I could come up with is that he must have chosen them because there was no competition there.
Yeah, and so, I guess, what's the name of the town again in Ontario?
I grew up in Acton.
Acton. Were there other Chinese people there?
Well, when we first arrived, there was another Chinese family there, but they were a family of two sons and a father, and they operated the local restaurant. But there were no other Chinese women, and there were no other Chinese children.
Do you think the bitterness that your mom had, that would have been less had there been other Chinese families, Chinese people that she could relate to, perhaps?
I think so. I think that it must have been a very, very lonely situation for her, and I think that with women, that kind of sisterhood is probably especially important.
She describes sort of what she felt as being sawn, being a table sawn in two?
Yes.
You asked her about that, or she explained that to you one time. What did she say?
I think she was just trying to give me a visual image of how she felt about her life, that it was a life that was cut in half and it would never be whole again.
One half being in China, one half being here?
Yes, one half being in Canada.
Yeah. You have no memory of living in Hong Kong?
I have no solid memory of living in Hong Kong, and as I talk about it in the book, the memories that I have of my childhood in Hong Kong are really fragments here and there, and they don't really make up a solid picture. They're more senses and smells and the sense of following someone through markets. I don't really actually recall anything with great clarity.
And how much of the memory that you have of it comes from other people, say, that they've been telling you your whole life, maybe?
Some of it comes through my mother telling me things, but I think that the kinds of memories that one has from a childhood that hasn't been revisited, because I never went back to Hong Kong until 50 years later, I think those kinds of memories have to do more with the senses, with feeling sullen, and with smelling incense, and with the feeling of your legs aching, those kinds of memories, rather than being able to say, I can remember my mother saying this, or I can remember eating this, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Now, the book opens with you talk about your father having hanged himself.
Yes.
What was he like?
My father?
Yeah.
Well, my father was, he was a bitter man, in the same way that my mother was a bitter woman. My father was extremely hardworking. He worked from dawn to dusk. He worked all his life. He was a man who was extremely devoted to his family. I think he was very much a Confucian man. He believed in that Confucian kind of order. He believed that it was his duty to look after his family, come hell or high water. And he believed that happiness could only be achieved through one's own family. I don't think he understood the notion of personal happiness, and I think that that's perhaps why he was able to sacrifice the way he did.
Now, I'm sure family throughout your life have said that you're like him, perhaps. In what way are you like him?
Well, I am like him in that I have a great devotion to family, and I'm like him in that I have a love of words, and I have a love of story, because that particular gift came from my father.
Now, you talk in the book, after he died, of finding a box of his stuff under his bed.
Yes.
What was it like finding the head tax certificate?
Oh, I remember my hands starting to shake. I remember feeling like I was holding a piece of history. And it really was a very solid reminder of a very sad chapter of Canada's history.
And do you still have it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, where do you keep it?
I keep it in my filing cabinet.
Yeah. Did you look at it often?
I don't look at it often, but I would say that I look at it occasionally.
Yeah. Where are you on issues like getting reparations, like families getting reparations on from relatives who've paid the tax?
Well, as far as personal reparation is concerned, I'm not really sure that there's any point in that. I guess my feeling is that so many of those people are no longer with us, and their descendants, I think, by and large, have done well by Canada. Canada isn't the same country that my father entered. I think we're very fortunate that Canada has progressed and that it's become a multicultural place that is far more welcoming of people from other parts of the world than it was at the time that my father came. I think that progress is absolutely great. And so I live in a very different Canada from the one that my father lived in. So as far as reparation is concerned, I guess I would like to perhaps see something more on a collective scale, perhaps something like scholarships, perhaps something like funding toward old age homes, programs that might continue to help people who have arrived in Canada, with language and finding work and those sorts of things. I think things that would perhaps help immigrants in a collective way rather than in a specific individual way, as far as the money is concerned, I guess.
Yeah. Growing up, did you have to deal with racism yourself?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And do you think, because you had to deal with that, and as you say, growing up in Canada, it was a different time than it is now, did that compel you to perhaps be more Canadian than Chinese?
I think what propelled me to be so Canadian was the fact that I grew up in a small town. Because in the small town that I grew up in, for several years, I was the only Chinese kid. So if I wanted to go out and play with other kids, they were white. You know, that was just the given that I found myself living in. And I think that in that situation, children want to be like other children. And so as a kid, I grew up with references that were white. All my cultural references were white. The people that I saw on television were white. My teachers were white. The doctor was white. Everybody was white. And I can still remember as a kid wanting to grow up and look like Sandra Dee, even though I knew that was an impossibility.
Yeah. We touched on your parents' bitterness. Because of the way you grew up, do you think that added to their bitterness, maybe?
I don't think so. I think my parents were always extremely proud of me, and I think I was probably the one bright spot in their lives, because my parents both loved me. They loved me intensely, and I think that was something I always knew, and I think that's always been probably the single reason why I've managed to cope as well as I have.
And then the book talks about this trip that you and your siblings took.
Yes.
Back to China.
Yes.
When was this?
The first trip was in 2006, and then my husband and I went back the following year.
So it was 2006, the whole family, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
In the time that your parents were alive, did they ever go back to China?
Well, my father went back to China, actually, five times between the time he arrived in 1914 and 1947. But when he returned in 1949, just before the arrival of the communists, he never returned after that point. And my mother, once she arrived in Canada, never went back. So her life truly was cut in half.
Did she ever want to go back, say, even for a trip?
I think she wanted to go back. But you have to also remember that for most of the time that she was in Canada, she was a poor woman. So the idea of ever having enough money to go back, I think, was an impossible dream.
So 2006 was the first time you went back yourself,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, and what precipitated that?
I don't think there was any one specific reason. I think that I had wanted to go back to China for a very long time, but I think, you know, life got in the way. I was raising a family. I was working. I had a mortgage. I had a lot of reasons for not going back, but when I look back on them, none of them were very good. And I think when I finally did go back in 2006, it was one of those organic decisions. It was time. And when my brothers and I started talking about it, I think there was a unspoken realization that this was something we'd better do.
And is this the idea of going back for you? Was it to find a connection to your history, to your parents' past?
Well, yes and no. I think that that's always an underlying reason for anyone returning to a homeland that they left as a young child. But in my situation, because I had become so Canadian, I really initially thought that I would be going back more like a tourist, because I hadn't maintained correspondence with the family in China, whereas my brothers had. My brothers had been in China until they were, I think one was about 20 and the other one was 21. So they left China as young men, and they had very, very clear memories, and they had a childhood with his sister. So for them, it was a completion of a circle, in a sense. But for me, I really thought that I would be kind of tagging along as a tourist, almost.
My parents are Filipino.
Yes.
And I was born here.
Yes.
So I really found this book fascinating,
and
thank you. And I'm finding it fascinating as I read it. Now I've had Denise Chong on the program in the past, and I've had Wason Choi on the program,
yes.
And we've talked about relating common experiences. I asked both of them because they went to China. I guess both of them were born here in British Columbia.
Yes,
I think,
they were.
Right?
They
yeah.
were born here.
I asked them about going back to China in separate interviews and feeling a connection once there. They both said no. You found in your experience differently, right?
Well, I found it different, and I found some connection, and yet at the same time, it reaffirmed in my mind that I was that I am a Canadian, that I'm a northern person because of where I've grown up. But I felt the connection because when I went back, I had a half-sister there. And also, I speak the language there. I'm not sure that Wason and Denise do. I speak the local dialect fluently.
Do you think you were looking for a connection going back?
I may have been looking for one without realizing it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I went back to the Philippines in January for a short vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the same thing that probably you did, that I was going to do the touristy stuff, right?
Yes.
And nearly 6 months later, I still think that vacation was that.
Yes.
But at the same time, I find it oddly comfortable.
Yes.
And I never thought I would.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that for me, I was one of those people that came away with having made certain discoveries that I didn't expect to make and having made certain connections that I didn't expect to make, but yet at the same time, there were certain aspects of myself that were confirmed. Like, the fact that I am a Canadian was very, very confirmed in my mind. And the fact that I don't think that life that is being led by my relatives in China, it just felt so far away.
And do you think it's far away not just because of place, but because of time?
I mean, think so.
Yeah, the time that your parents left there, I mean, it is quite a long time ago.
Yes, I think so. And also, I went back for a visit to rural China, and rural China is not at all like urban China. The village that my father came from, our ancestral village, some of the homes there, they look practically like they're out of the Middle Ages. You know, people are still using solid fuel, and there weren't any proper windows, and there was no central heating. Well, I guess partly because it's in the south, but it was just very, very primitive.
Yeah, and then your husband Michael.
Yes.
How did he take to this finding memory process that you went through?
Well, he loves China,
yeah.
And I think that he found that he really loved the country. And my relatives were very warm toward him, and they were very, very accepting and receptive. And I think he, because he's a man who's very interested in natural history, I think that they found that very fascinating. And they were really pleased that this man should come along who looks so different from them, should be so interested in their country. And I think that actually made them very proud.
How badly did you need to write this memoir?
How badly did I need to write it? Well, I think that it was a story that I'd been intending to write for quite a while, because I do look upon my parents as being pioneers. I think that it was a story that I kind of kept buried because I didn't really know how to deal with it, largely I think because of my father's suicide. But I think after I had been back to China for those two trips actually gave me a lens through which to tell this story, and so that certainly made it easier.
And in terms of intent of who you'd like this book to be read by, did you think about that? I mean, is this for your generation or mine, perhaps?
I don't really think about that much as a writer. As a writer, I always think about, do I have a story? Do I have a good story? And if it happens to be a memoir, that's just kind of a sidebar. More than anything else, it has to be a good story. And I really did feel that in this situation that I had a very good and powerful story to tell. And even though it's specifically about Chinese immigrants and specifically about my parents and their divided lives, I also felt that it was a story that speaks to people on a universal level, that it really speaks to our humanity, that it speaks to about wanting to find place and about the struggle that people have in order to find place.
And I think indeed it has. Judy, it's been such a pleasure to talk today and especially to read this book. Congratulations on it. Continued good luck.
Well, thank you, Joseph, and thank you for your interest.
You're very welcome. The book is called The Year of Finding Memory. It's published by Random House. Its author, Judy Fong Bates, on the line. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.